You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Minutes after 9 o'clock here on a Wednesday, hump day across the world, or at least in parts of the world. Joining me from Montana is Montana Man, also known as Rob Schwartz. Rob, Montana Man, how are you?
Great morning.
Is it? Give us an update on Montana. What's going on?
God, it couldn't be better right now, man. It's like 60 and not a cloud in the sky.
Okay, so, and then what does that have you doing on the big ranch?
Well, I got to kind of lay low still after the surgery. I'm not supposed to be picking anything up over 15 pounds, but I got fish getting delivered today.
Okay, you violated that, like, on day two of the post-op recovery, right?
So yeah, no, actually, I think day one. I did so much. But it drew some boundaries for me, so I'm trying to... Now Alicia's gotten a little more stern when,
Really?
I'm thinking, oh yeah, she's kind of done with, cause you know, you do a bunch of stuff and then the next thing you know, you're like, I gotta go sit down for a while. And that's usually when, she piles in and lays down the discipline.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. What, all right. So, so how's the recovery going though? You know, the last, we heard that, you know, you'd had a lump removed from your kidney, yes?
Yep.
And so you're going down that path. How long does it take for you to be full up round, operational?
They say 6 weeks. I go in, so we're at 3 weeks today. I go in tomorrow for the post-op deal where they'll just probably poke around the holes and make sure I didn't herniate anything, which I think I'm good.
You think?
I think there's some odd pains here and there, but for the most part, I think I didn't screw it up too bad.
All right, so everything's proceeding as good. Any advice for people? I mean, you did this after listening to Rudy's like near death experience during his colonoscopy. Mike had gone in to have some. Mike went in for something, and that's when they found his gallstones.
Gallbladder, he had some stones or something.
Yeah, and that had not been diagnosed heretofore. And so you listened to all that and said, I need to go get checked.
Yeah, no, the gallstones and the heartburn was what put it together for me because I was having trouble with that. And when Mike said it was my gallbladder, I'm like, well, hell, they haven't looked at that. Let's go take a peek. And that's when they found this thing on my kidney, and then they told my gallbladder's fine. I just got to quit living like I'm 25 and almost 50 now. So they said back off of life a little bit and your heartburn probably ease up.
You know what? I was told that by a doctor a number of years ago. They said, stud, actually I was at MEPS in North Dakota and I was I was taking my physical to go back on active duty. After being out of the Marine Corps, I had to get reappointed. And so, you know, you're in this room with all these, you know, guys that most of them were coming back on active duty, reserve guys up in North Dakota, guys going back in the Army, whatnot. And so I was there and I was the oldest guy. So the doctor calls me in and he said that you're a Marine, aren't you? And I said, yeah, how'd you know? It says it. He goes, no, I can just tell. I said, whatever. He's a doctor, right? So I had to humor him because I needed his signature. And he said, no. He said, look, let me guess. You've been active your whole life. I said, yeah. He said, sports. And I said, yeah. He said, well, let me give you some advice. You only have so much to give until your body starts taking it back. So if I could give you some advice, listen to your body. And pretty good advice. Because as you get older, when you break stuff and hurt stuff, it doesn't snap back. I mean, it takes months and, you know, something that used to take maybe a week or two, you know, it takes months and then it's just such a drag starting over again. So I thought it was good advice. So you obviously got the same advice. Are you heeding it though? Because you're one of those Copenhagen guy. You like your beer. You're that guy.
Yeah. No. Cut Copenhagen in half. Cut beer in half, and amazingly, the heartburn is going away. Hold on.
Did you say amazingly? Amazingly.
Well, no.
First of all, Copenhagen will. Look, I've been around that stuff since I was a little kid because guys in baseball did it all the time. I wanted to do it because it looked so cool because they spit all the time. And I thought spitting was cool because my dad chewed leaf tobacco. And he spit everywhere. And I was like, yeah, that's cool as hell. But I couldn't chew leaf. I tried to stick that stuff in my mouth, and my gag just would not have it. It was like, bleh. So I could not get leaf tobacco. And so I tried Copenhagen, and I thought it was going to kill me. I wound up being able to dip, what was it called, wintergreen?
Well, yeah, they got all kinds of stuff now.
Now, but back in the day, there was only three kinds. It was Copenhagen, I want to say wintergreen, and there was
Skull had wintergreen, right. And then, God, those are really your only two.
Right.
They came out with the long cut. Not too Skull did after the, because they just had kind of a wintergreen snuff, and then the long cut came after that, and then it all blossomed into Christ. You can get any flavor you want now.
Right, but back in the day you couldn't. So I wound up doing, I tried to put Copenhagen in my mouth, and I had the same response as I had with leaf. But wintergreen, I could do that, which allowed me to spit, which was the only thing I was interested in. But I really had to make an effort because I was into the look, but I did not like the taste. How guys do Copenhagen, and some guys swallow that shit, it's just absolutely beyond me. Don't understand it.
No.
And then you're surprised that, yeah. And that, and a little beer, yeah, cut that stuff down, and I can't believe my heartburn went away.
Yeah, no, and my blood pressure dropped down, too. I'm like back to where I was when I was 25. The doctor was kind of like, well, this is below your normal. I'm like, well, I made a couple lifestyle changes. And he just looked at me like, well, no shit. It takes a few years for me to get things, but I'll catch up. Don't worry.
I'll catch on. So a few lifestyle modifications and everybody good to go.
Yeah, no, it's all, outlook is good on life, and God, just feel better. Feel better, and then trying not to do as much as I should. We were, I was beating around yesterday, and, we got 120 pairs of cows on the west side of the ranch, and the neighbor ranch, they run Red Angus, and we run all black. And, we brought cows in, and I think they had their bull out, and he must have smelled the trucks go by, because all of a sudden he showed up at our fence, and that was about 3 days ago. And then I'm bouncing around yesterday, and I see a red bull out with our black cows, and I was like, oh, this is not good, in the middle of the ranch. So instinct says, well, let's just roll over there, get the dog, and we'll chase this bugger out of these coolies and get him up on the road and chase him home a couple miles. But I thought better, and I went and grabbed the leash, and I said, hey, you got to come with me. And we started cutting this bull out and running him up the coulee, and I couldn't get there in the side-by-side, so I told my wife to get out and chase him up that coulee, take the dog with you, and I kind of left her there in the middle of the ranch, and that didn't go well. Because I couldn't hop out and just start scurrying up the mountain, so I had to take side by side.
You had to leave her there.
Exactly. And I couldn't let him get head off to the east with the cows, so I had to, toolie around on that side by side to kind of skirt him. And in the end, I left her about 2 miles back, and she had to walk up a pretty dang good grade for about a mile and a half. and she had a little red flag on a stick, so you can shoe that bull around with it. And all I see on the top of this ridge is a little red flag bouncing along, and I was like, this isn't probably going to end well. I better just stay away from that as long as I can. And that didn't help either, but she was a good sport. I just said, well, you got your workout in today anyhow, and the bull's out, so everything's good, isn't it? And she said, why did you leave me out there in the middle of nowhere?
In the middle of nowhere. Wait, come on. What do you mean? We're downtown.
Yeah. So, no, that was good. I'm being a little bit smarter, and hopefully the doc takes off the reins a little bit tomorrow, so I'd like to get some grass mowed and that kind of thing, but we'll see. We'll take it as it comes.
All right. I want to have you on, and I'm curious. We've been talking about this leadership at the point of friction, leadership at the point of confrontation, and I want to get your thoughts on it. The marquee leadership failures that we've seen in the Marine Corps have all, and this may surprise people or not, probably doesn't surprise most of us that have been around it for a long time. Every one of them had NCOs, staff NCOs, or officers standing there when they happened, and people that did not intervene, and they didn't intervene on a variety of levels. One, to protect sometimes dead bodies, sometimes prisoners, sometimes recruits, sometimes female Marines. And in most of those cases, there were attempts made, hey, man, that's not cool. Hey, man, you shouldn't be doing that. Met with, hey, mind your own business, or, hey, shut the fuck up and get out of here. And then that's where it ended. And people went to the brig. They not only went to the brig, but received bad conduct discharges, other than honorable discharges, which will impact them for the rest of their lives. Some people lost their lives. Some people lost reputations. Things that, you know, you can't easily get back. Some cases never get back. I'm curious your thoughts. Why does it happen? And Mike's explanation was some people just can't lead. Is it that simple?
Yeah, well, in a sense, yeah. I mean, or some people can't see it. In all those instances, there is probably a climate, or an instance, urinating on the bodies. I would think that's a climate, unit climate issue. And some of the guys taking that IED maker and putting them in a hole and then requesting permission to engage. That was an instance set up by, you know, some of their buddies getting hurt by who these Marines perceived as, you know, being this guy. You know, I had an instance similar to that in Somalia. We lost a guy on a night patrol, and after that was done, I was a platoon commander, had to go to the company commander and say, hey, I've lost my leash, you know, I am not going to be able to hold these guys. You got to give me a day. You know, I got to just put me on the bench for a day, take me out of the patrolling cycle, because I need some time to get the leash back on these guys. That instance, or that event, had put us in a spot that I couldn't lead. I needed some time to get a grip back, you know, and my responsibility as a leader was to recognize that this unit right now is in a dangerous place, and I need a minute to get it back together. And, you know, some guys would not be able to take a step back, and this goes back to Mike's comment of, you know, some guys just can't lead. Well, you know, being able to see and feel what your units, where they're at, is part of it. And if you can't read it, then you're not doing the right thing. So in that instance,
how old were you?
How old? What are you as a second lieutenant?
23, 24, 25? Depending.
Yeah, I'd go with ballpark at 24, 25.
24, and obviously never been to combat. Closest you've ever been to combat was going on to CACs, maybe?
Right.
Okay, all right. But you had enough, sense, or you as a leader were savvy enough to see those things.
Yeah, and that's part of it in an instance, and they were very seasoned Marines because they all just came back from Desert Storm, and they were on, what do they call it, stop loss. So they were an angry bunch anyway. Right. You know, they came back to 1-7 from Desert Storm, and then all of a sudden, you know, hey, to all you corporals that thought you were at the end of your tour, you're not. You're going back to Africa. So they were fairly salty and fairly angry. And being able to recognize the tone of it and being able to step back and go, you know, I just need need a second. And, you know, it ended up turning out okay. And then the other instance of, you know, the command climate, and Gunner spoke to it, and Dave Furness and Sergeant Major Zickafoos were always out in the field just checking that pulse. You know, what is the climate of this outfit, you know, and those centers you look at of the discipline of the unit is going to tell you, you know, you'll be able to see, you know, what that climate is. Are these guys loose and free and feel like, you know, they can do what they want or what they think is right? And, you know, 10 months into a year-long deployment, what you think is right is much different at that point than it was when you showed up on week one. And maintaining that discipline throughout that year-long period is a tough thing to do because it's an arduous 365 days on your mind, especially when you see your buddies get hurt. And being able to maintain that climate so when those young leaders are in a spot where they can make a stupid decision, they go back and think, you know, this isn't the right thing to do. And I kind of, you talked about the point of friction,
right.
and that's where it gets tough. And that is a tough thing. And I learned it at the recruit depot. You know, you're there as an officer. You're not making Marines. You know, you're watching staff NCOs and NCOs make Marines. And your job is to protect them from themselves. And if you can get that in your head, you know, that's your job, you know, is to make sure every single one of your hats leaves there, preferably, you know, with another stripe on their sleeve, if you really do it right, and then building that climate that they believe that you're not just there to tell on them, to find them doing something wrong, to NJP them, but you're there to protect them from themselves, because that job is tough. I mean, I told all my hats, I said, I couldn't do your job. I do not have the internal discipline to go from a 3-month training cycle where you just put your lifeblood into making these Marines and graduating them, walking across the parade deck at 10 o'clock in the morning, and then at 1:30 that afternoon, picking up another 600 knucklehead civilians that just have got nothing that we want in them. You know, and being able to not choke 50% of them in the first week of that training cycle, I told them I couldn't do it. I mean, you guys are amazing at what you do and the discipline you have to be able just not to want to kill these guys. And once they understood that, hey, I'm here to help you today and then 5 years from now, you know, when you have two more stripes on your sleeve, instead of, you know, working in the chow hall as a corporal because you got NJP'd for doing something stupid.
Montana Man, our guest today, give me your thoughts, and because you did time there, relative to the drill field. You know, these stories that come out, I personally think putting somebody in a dryer is humorous, okay? When you're doing humorous, stupid stuff. I don't think it's funny when you're doing punitive stuff. The same thing, like, it's somewhat entertaining to call somebody, you know, by their nickname. When the nickname is terrorist and he's Muslim, that's not a joke. All this stuff has gone on in front of other drill instructors. What do you make of that? What do you make of that? And is there a difference in culture between Paris Island and San Diego? Because Marine Corps Times just did an article and said that from 2012 or 2014 to now, there's been two court martials in San Diego for hazing recruits. That is incredible. The story there is not that there was two, that number is incredibly low. And they should be congratulated on that, assuming that there's no other cases that have been swept under the rug or dealt with in any other nefarious way. If that's the record relative to hazing, that's exemplary. That's awesome. Is there a difference between Paris Island and MCRD San Diego? And your thoughts on how this stuff happens?
Well, I never did any time in Paris Island. Mine was at San Diego, so it's tough for me to compare. Obviously, there's always been a rivalry between the two coasts at Macon Marines, and, you know, the Hollywood Marine coming out of San Diego, and then the perceived much tougher Paris Island Marine because, you know, they got to deal with sand fleas, and
right. Just
the environment sucks, and you're not in happy San Diego is the biggest comparison. But as far as the two instances in, what did you say, 3 years?
Yeah, probably 3 or 4 years, I think, if I can recall. But something like that.
And, I mean, you got to think when it gets to a court-martial level, it's got to go through. They did a counseling statement even below a page 11 entry, which was we used to give 5x8 cards, which was basically, you know, you write out what happened and what the expectations are going forward on a 5x8 card, and you put it in their little drill instructor folder. You know, that's not their SRB. That's just a folder you keep on each hat, and it's got, you know, his training and what he's done for cycles and his time at the depot. You know, that goes away when the hat leaves. You know, and page 11 is your next step, and then NJP is another one. I mean, all those things, and they reflect the severity of the incident. When it gets to a court martial, God, I mean, it's got to be pretty bad. You know, there's got to be pre-thought. There's got to be it's got to be a thought out event, and it's got to be way out of the box. And I saw, probably one of those, while I was there in the 3 years in our battalion. And that was an individual. That was someone that just, and he actually came from my whole battalion. There was malice in this individual's heart. I mean, just the things he did to those privates on one specific night was heinous. And, you know, the other drill instructors on that team, you know, didn't know anything about it until, you know, one of the recruits piped up.
But come on, those guys emit that stuff all the time. I mean, if you worked with those guys, you know, yes?
In this instance, no, I believe.
Okay.
And the one who reported it was a senior drill instructor. You know, he came forward to me as the period commander, and he said, "Hey, sir, I think we got an issue that we need to look into."
But do you think that, and he didn't see any of that coming beforehand? Because to me, my life experience is you see indicators along the way, and you don't intervene or maybe you say something and they say, "Get out of here." And then all of a sudden this blows up, and now it's to the point of I'm going to get compromised. Hey, sir, we've got a problem.
And you could think of, in this instance, it was a young drill instructor, and it was his first night on duty by himself. You know, so he was a bob hat, you know, one of the new ones, and he got his up check through the initial first phase, I think, of the training cycle, and, you know, he was allowed to stay alone at home at night with the kids. And boom, first night, that happened. So in that instance, no. But in other instances, you know, there is that habitual growing minor infraction to a moderate infraction to all of a sudden you find, you know, privates have been charged $5 for their sea service deployment ribbon. And, oh, by the way, they had something called a pizza party where basically, you know, they ordered pizza and got it delivered, and all the privates had to pay, you know, $20. So there was a hat that was scraping, you know, God, I think he scraped off about $500 that night, type of deal. And then you track that thing back. All of a sudden that pops up on your radar and you go, okay, well, there's smoke. And then you start looking back on it and go, yeah, this is not a one-time instance. This was a bunch of small things that were let go. And then there was a couple moderate infractions that showed up, and they were kind of, you know, hey, don't do that anymore. But there was that freedom allowed to where, you know, they thought they could get away with those type of things. And when I went to the depot as a first lieutenant, and I was in one company, and then another company in the battalion, basically, I think from the series gunnery sergeant down, there weren't many survivors. So three four-man teams, and the series Guns. I think that's where the head lopping ended, going up the chain. But then, you know, they took the entire leadership piece out, and then I went over to that company as a series commander, and you could kind of see the differences in companies and go, okay, this command environment, the climate here is a lot looser, and it's got a lot more kind of anger towards the recruits, and it was something you had to, and it took time to build a relationship with, you know, the leadership and the drill instructors and the guys at the pointy end of the Marine making spear, to go, okay, this is not how we do it. You know, we can still make great, hard Marines, and we can still operate in within this SOP and do it. And to do that, it's more difficult. It's more work on a drill instructor. You know, you can't hit them, you can't cuss at them, you can't, you know, point your finger at them, you gotta use a knife hand, and you gotta do all these silly things, but we can still make great hard Marines that when they get to the fleet, you know, you'd be proud to see them show up in your platoon. But it takes a little bit more work, it takes a little bit more remediation, and you can't take shortcuts to do it. So you need to get on board with that plan and work a little harder, and oh, by the way, there's a big reward if you do it well. I mean, how many meritorious promotions they have at the depot compared to a regular line unit is amazing. If you go down there and watch some of these guys that know how to do it and work hard and throw themselves at it and do it correctly and really do give a shit.
Right.
I mean, they can go down there as a buck sergeant and come out of there as a gunny in 3 years. You know, I watched Sergeant Thresher was one of my hats, and he's now Sergeant Major Thresher. God, he's probably even retired. A smart and extremely intense artillery guy in every meritorious promotion he was in there. And don't get me wrong, he knew that recruit training SOP like the back of his hand. And a few times I had to look at him and go, can we do this? He's like, sir, it doesn't say you can't. All right, back up. I mean, he knew it line for line. I mean, he could quote it to you. I mean, he was a smart guy that wanted to make great Marines. And he stayed inside the SOP, and he did great work. And he was commended for it. I mean, continually high rifle, continually high drill, you know, honor platoon type of deal, to the point, time after time, you go back and look and go, okay, what is this? How does he do it? You know, if he is not taking any shortcuts, how is he building great Marines inside the SOP and blowing everybody else out of the water? And it was just hard work, diligence, and holding his hats and the recruits accountable. So it can be done, but he was a specimen of a drill instructor and a Marine. I mean, just one of those guys that just well studied and just threw himself at everything full force. So it can be done. And
okay, now I got to take a quick break, and then I want to transfer to your experience as an XO and go maybe back to Somalia. The drill field is not so we talked about at the point of confrontation there. I want to talk about at the discipline at the point of confrontation and its role in and it was real interesting talking to Jack O'Ban this morning. What is discipline? And I had a conversation with somebody last night that said, you know, it said, hey Mac, all the chicken shit, Irish penance, the inspections, the stupidity, you know what that bred in all of us? Discipline, attention to detail. You want to know why we ironed our t-shirts? Because they told us to. Those little small exercises in discipline is what creates a small force. I never in my life thought I'd be saying that, but I am, and I believe it because I've seen it, and I've seen units pay who thought they could just walk in and be killing machines who weren't disciplined. I've seen them pay in blood in combat, and I know it's true now. Yet we still don't want to embrace it. We want a la carte discipline. So I want to get your thoughts on a la carte discipline, and then ultimately, because I think there's a direct linkage between a la carte discipline and then shrinking from shrinking at the point of confrontation. So if you don't mind, we'll take a break, and then we'll let you be Montana Man again. Is that all right?
All right.
All right. Montana Man, Rob Schwartz, continues with us on a Wednesday hump day. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good,
are you really listening?
I still have nightmares.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer, but I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our way of living, our quality of life? The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
On Veterans Day, the nation honors the men and women who risk their lives to protect our freedom. Social Security does its absolute best to honor veterans and active duty members of the military every day by giving them the respect they deserve. For those who return home with injuries, Social Security is a resource they can turn to. If you know any wounded veterans, please let them know about Social Security's Wounded Warriors website. The Wounded Warriors website answers many commonly asked questions and shares other useful information about disability benefits, including how veterans can receive expedited processing of disability claims. Learn more by visiting www.socialsecurity.gov/woundedwarriors.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. On Wednesday, we continue. Montana Man is in Montana, as you would expect. Although sometimes he's in Idaho, so that's why we have to. Then he would be Idaho Man. But he's not really known as Idaho Man. He's kind of become Montana Man, which is kind of a cool name. Rob Schwartz. let's talk about, go back to the fleet, be an XO, be whatever you want to be. Leadership at the point of confrontation, and the role of discipline in doing that. How does that all work? Because it seems to me like we like to a la carte discipline. I like this, I don't like this, right? I don't want to sew the tape, name tapes on my pants, so I don't. I don't like to have my room set up like other guys do, so I'm not going to. And guess what? In today's dormitory, I don't need to. So I kind of pick and choose where I am Marine. And since discipline's kind of unpopular, it's only the atypical units that go out of their way to enforce that. And then I kind of have what I have. So I'm curious your thoughts on that. A la carte discipline and shrinking at the point of confrontation.
Well, I mean, you guys have talked to it. You know, it's a nasty ball of yarn when it starts to unroll, you know. If you don't ensure that, you know, in our day, boots were polished, Irish pennants were gone, you know, pockets were, ironed down and that kind of thing. That's where it starts, you know. If you want to let your unit, start to peel off that way, you're just going to start trundling downhill. And it's everything. It's not a pick and choose. There's not an option to just say, I like this or don't like this. I mean, this is the rule. This is what it is. I don't necessarily like it. I don't know why the hell we're doing it. And in that case, maybe we should ask a question of why. But by God, we're still going to do it until somebody gives us that answer. It just starts to unravel as soon as you let those small things go. They get to bigger things, and then all of a sudden you're getting on a plane or getting on a ship and heading into harm's way, and you don't have that, you know, immediate obedience to orders type of thought where this is why it is or this is what we need to do. Let's go get it done. We can ask why later. This is what we need to do. Hey, sir, I got a question. And you get your answer. You may not like it, but by God, you're going to put your friggin' shoulders behind whatever we're doing at that point. You had your opportunity to voice your question. You don't have that if you start to let those small things go in garrison. And it doesn't matter if it's on range 400, and it doesn't matter if it's in the barracks on Friday morning. You start letting those things slide, it just goes sideways quick. And it's a continual, painful, stance that a leader has to take. And, you know, you hate to do it. Do I got to go in here and remind this guy again to do fill in the blank? You know, why does your uniform look like you just hauled it out of your sea bag on a Friday morning? I mean, why do I have to do it? You know, and that's what went through my mind is, you know what the deal is. You know what's out there. Do I have to keep beating you people until you get it that I'm not going to back off? And that point of friction it's a tough spot. And it can be that small thing like an Irish pennant, you know, leaning over to a guy and pulling it off his blouse and go, let me help you out, devil. And, you know, that's a nice way of saying, hey, get your shit together, man. We're not going to tolerate, you looking like a bag of crap. And over time, people get it, and then, you know, down the road, all of a sudden it becomes instinctive. I know if I let this go, somebody is going to stand up and say, fix it. And once you get that attitude in place, then you don't have to do shit, you know, as a leader. But it's that just continual, relentless, you know, instilling that boundary into your unit that's going to make you successful down the line. And it's not a pick and choose deal because all of a sudden somebody sees, well, that's the regulation, but we don't have to do it. Why do I got to do this one over here? And if it gets to that point, then you're losing. You're behind, and you may not catch up.
You know, it's interesting. I think that one of the things that's an indicator is when you say, okay, everybody grab your boots. We're falling out for boot inspection, right? When you decide when you're going to chase the this is stupid, why do we have to do it, in my opinion, is really important. The answer should be, shut up and grab your boots, let's go. I'll find out later. But when you say, when you hear, that's a good question, let me go find out, that's exactly what you can't have. And when that creeps into it, that then the lance corporals have a say. Okay? And you could certainly ask that question after it, but it erodes good order and discipline not to do what you're told to do. Again, no matter how stupid it is. Because guess what? Sometimes you're going to get told to do something, and you're not going to understand it. And yet it's the right thing to do. Why? Because there's a huge piece of the puzzle that you don't know about. And they don't have time to explain it to you right now. The Israelis had this, I thought, a very cool command and control thing. I was reading, I want to say, The Valley of Tears or something like that. It's a great book about the 67 war. And they talk about the race for the Golan Heights, right? The Israelis on one side, the Syrians on the other, UN peacekeepers, unfortunately, in the middle. And they knew that they had minutes. One of them was going to win the race, the race to the top of the Golan, and then have a decided advantage as somebody fought their way up from a valley. And the battalion commander had this thing where when he didn't have time to explain it to you, he said, seize, or set checkpoint 5-7, do it now. And when he said do it now, what he communicated was, I know this is not going to make sense to you, but I know something that you don't, but I don't have time to explain it to you. Just do it. And I thought that was pretty savvy, in terms of communicating something to a subordinate in a very short period of time because you don't have time to do anything else. Knowing that they're going to question that because it doesn't make sense or it's not what you've rehearsed or any other number of factors that go into it. But I think it is really important when you entertain those questions. And that certainly, you can, but when you do it and how you do it, pretty important.
Yep. No, and it's that comes over time, as your unit develops too. All of a sudden subordinates, they understand that, hey, the boss will ask the question, why, when it's appropriate. So they have that trust, in leadership to know, that the leadership is going to ask the question and do the right thing. That comes over time. And then all of a sudden, they don't have to ask the question anymore. Or they understand that there's no time for questions now. It's do whatever it said in that task line, and get a task and a purpose out to them, and we're asking questions later. And that comes with time and rehearsals and, humans interacting with humans in stressful situations, whether it's during the workup or the beginning part of a deployment, you get honed to the point that there's a trust there, and that's what every unit should strive for. And all those things, all those silly things we do at the beginning part of a workup, that we think is silly, all of a sudden show up later and say, that was an exercise in trust building is really what it was, or unit cohesion, or fill in the blank, type of deal. But it paid us. It was a small step, and it might have seemed silly at the time, but, it built our relationship to a point that we don't got to ask questions anymore.
Let me, here's an email for you. Mac, I think this discussion has to do with units that are poorly led. I think units that are well led, they get it. They understand. You have leaders that are relentless about discipline. I've listened to the interview with Sergeant Major Zikafus where he talks about learning from Staff Sergeant Barrett at the time, nobody eats on my vehicle. And then he went to Somalia and he found out why. And what he learned was discipline. That had to do with having flies all over the place who carried diseases which made Marines sick. There was a reason for it. People may not have understood it, but it's pretty cool to hear him talk about how he learned about discipline and how it became important to him and why good units practice it. I think the things you're talking about are resident in units that are poorly led. And I don't think the explanation goes a whole lot farther than that. Units that are well led spot guys who are struggling and people intervene, whether through mentoring or other modes. It sounds like you had such a group in Afghanistan because I know that's where you talked about serving with Zikafoos. I enjoyed the conversation. Again, I'll echo what others have said. You don't hear this kind of conversation anyplace else. Thanks for doing what you do. Is it simply a function of good leadership? And where we see this stuff, if you start flipping over more rocks, you're going to find a lot more stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is. It's all about the, and, you know, you use Colonel Furness, then Colonel Furness's approach, and he was not afraid of the point of friction by any stretch. I think he enjoyed operating in that space, actually. To watch his blood pressure rise, I think he liked being in that zone. But, I mean, his focus on, from a regimental combat team commander's level down, I mean, that's 5,000, 5,500 guys that you're trying to reach, every single one of them, and just the relentless pursuit of instilling that discipline. You know, guys like that who do it, I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, if you don't have that guy, those type of individuals in leadership positions, it's not going to happen. The natural trend, the human trend, is to not want to do something that seems silly, to not want to do something that seems difficult for minimal gain. You know, cleaning your weapon after a patrol. Well, I didn't even shoot the dang thing. And there's not much dust on it. So why do I got to clean it?
Shut up.
Yeah, exactly.
Shut up and clean it.
Right. Having the guys there that aren't afraid to sit up and go and say that, you know, just shut up and clean it. Now, and I'm not even going to take the time to freaking explain to you why. You know, just those type of individuals that are stern when they need to be, and then are there for their guys on the backside, and get that sense of, hey, I'm here for you as a leader. I'm here to listen. And I'm here to ensure you go home safe to your family. You know, that other aspect of it, I think is a huge piece. You know, that trust built, in there. Hey, sir, this is stupid. And that Marine knows that you really give a shit about him. You don't even have to say anything. You just freaking kind of look over your glasses and that's it. Communication's complete.
Do you want me to kill you right now or should I wait? And then they laugh and then they sit down and they start cleaning their weapon.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many times as the XO, I had guys come in my office and, you know, I was kind of the listening post, for that outfit, and people weren't afraid to come into my office and shut the door and go, sir, this is stupid, or this guy's a knucklehead, or whatever. And there are many conversations that were very one way. I just listen, look over my reading glasses, look at the door. And that was it. There you go. You were listened to. Now freaking beat it. And then on the other hand, you know, engaging in that conversation, okay, where are we going? What's the problem? Type of deal. And that's, for me, that was a fun part of the job. And it's a required part of the job because that's how you know, that's how your finger stays on the pulse of what's happening. It's being able to hear and allowing subordinates to speak is a big deal. And that affords you as a leader the opportunity to just look over your glasses and go, that's it. Freaking, you're done. And, you know, they don't get all butt hurt and freaking start crying and huff off. They understand, all right, I got my piece out there. And I'm going to move on as directed. That's definitely part of it.
Okay, so let me ask you very succinctly, why does the Marine Corps seem to have so many of these marquee level failures? Do we, or do we have a few and they just blow up and get into print? Why?
You go back to that email, I think, you know, it comes down to, it's pretty simple. I mean, a lot of it is that leadership piece, whether it's knowing your unit to keep them out of trouble or not instilling discipline in your unit. I think it's that dang simple.
So it's either one, poor leader in a poor leadership organization, in a poorly led organization, that stuff will happen.
Yeah, it's okay. Just that simple, I think. And I've seen instances of it's an individual. You know, there's malice in that individual, no matter what that leadership team does. You know, they're just gonna screw it up. And I've seen that too. You know, on the drill field, specifically. But you know, there's those guys out there, and you can push back and say, okay, well, it's the leadership's responsibility to identify it and head it off before it happens. And you know, you can't do it 100% of the time, I don't think. There's going to be some of those instances where it is the individual. But in the instances where it is not, and it's a command climate issue or a lack of discipline in that unit issue, then when the chips start coming down, they need to start coming down at the higher levels. Because whoever built that climate or allowed that climate to get where it is, where that instance can happen, they need to be held accountable for allowing that climate, for allowing those junior Marines to believe that, you know, this probably isn't that bad.
Why don't we ever see that? Because you have yet to see a regimental commander, battalion commander, and their sergeant major charged with dereliction of duty for failure to provide this command, this climate, which is required. And that is what your unit failed to do. You know from day one at officer candidate school, you'll be held accountable for that. Here you go, colonel, soon to be lieutenant colonel or major, and we're going to show you the door. Why don't we do that? Too hard to prove? Legally?
You know, that's kind of what I was thinking. That's kind of where I was going when you were asking the question. You know, God, that's tough. You know, what instances can you go to in an NJP or a court-martial that says, okay, in this instance, you know, you should have done this to ensure your unit had a better climate that wouldn't allow, you know, this to happen 6, 8, 10 months down the road. That's pretty tough. And you can't just go by and start lopping off heads, you know, six command levels up just because one instance shows up. You know, you've got to go back and prove, I would think, okay, this is where you failed. You know, you have a climate here that you've allowed, you know, all this, you know, fill-in-the-blank hazing at the depot,
right.
You know, heinous crimes in combat to happen. Over the last year, you know, you have not provided the discipline in that climate that would allow this or force this not to happen. You know, that's a hard thing to do to an individual that's committed, you know, 20 years of their life. It's a tough spot. I'm not saying it shouldn't happen. I'm just going back to kind of what you were leading into is it's a tough spot to be able to prove that. That's the case, and this guy said got a role because of it.
No, I even if they were acquitted of it, I'd still like to see him charged with it, though. I want to see that guy. That guy needs to be drugged through the street for the sake of the organization. You know, no attrition, no morale. Look, you might have put together a pretty good career. You don't get to be an 06. To me, the first competitive rank in the Marine Corps for officers. You don't get to be an 06 without doing good stuff in your career. However, you know, you presided over this. It's not acceptable. And somebody's other than a staff sergeant got to be held accountable, and you're gonna be held accountable. And you know, you may beat this, but it's gonna send. We're throwing up and in on every 06 right now in the Marine Corps. I want them to know that I'm coming for them, because you are responsible.
Yeah.
And I may not be able to prove it, all right, but I'm still gonna make it hurt. And I'm kind of curious about that. I would, were I the commandant, I would operate a little bit loose with that. And say, okay, we may not be able to prove it, but guess what? Right? I'm going to charge him. Can the commandant, can you go to, does he hold NJP?
The commandant?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Maybe that's something we need to start. You're going to commandant level.
You have to go to, like, you'd go in front of the, you know, Training and Education Command, CG, or something like that, if you're at the depot.
Boo-hoo. We don't care about that. We don't care about that one bit. Training and education.
Our current commandant, that would be fun to watch.
Oh, he gets exactly. He gets fired up too. I was a part of it as one of his company commanders. That thing was that incident was not going away anytime soon. You were going to be there for a while because he wanted to know, why is this going on? Why didn't and it became, you know, everybody that went in there was sweating. If you're a company commander, he's going to look at you and you're going to get your ass chewed. First Sergeant, he was going to get his ass chewed if it didn't go right, and you knew what he expected. And so to me, that's what, I don't know if we're missing that these days or what, but anyway. I want to change gears. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to any of the special operations testimony yesterday. I'm curious about your thoughts. Special operations have grown tremendously in the DOD over the course of the last 15 years. We can now, you know, send special forces, because they are larger in number, to do thing and kind of do war on the down low. What are we doing in Somalia? What is our aim in Somalia? What are we doing in Yemen? What is our aim there? I don't know that that's been articulated for the public. We're at war with we're at war with the global war on terrorism. Got it. Al Qaeda. Got it. ISIS. Got it. What are we doing there? I'm curious about your thoughts about all of that based on what you heard in the testimony and the proliferation of Special Operations Command.
I caught parts of it, and mostly to hear General Thomas, because I worked with him at JSOC when he was the chief of staff there, and he's still the same guy, pretty straight shooter. He's going to tell you what he thinks, and he's not going to. He's less on the political realm, more on the General Mattis type of guy. If you're going to ask a question, you better be ready for the answer, because I'm going to give it to you. And I think he did some of that there. But the expansion, if you want to call it that, of the soft fight is, I think it's necessary if done correctly. And I got to watch General McChrystal do it correctly, in the sense that he spent a lot of his time talking to, in D.C., talking to FBI chief, CIA chief, NSA chief, and those type of things, and trying to, inside our own government, as crazy as it sounds, have an ability to communicate across those spectrums, from outside the DOD to inside the DOD, and hey, we're all chasing the same rabbit, so we need to talk about how we're doing it. And it sounded like, and General Thomas knows it because he saw it when it first started in, God, that was 6-9, so, you know, almost 10 years ago. When General McChrystal started working closer with the CIA and the FBI and having individuals from those units cross-decked onto the DOD side. So there was communication lines and a guy he could look at and say, we're chasing this guy. Call your people. What do you know about him? And then starting to build that spider diagram, that web of what the enemy lay down is, because that's what has to be done. And General McChrystal saw that, and his intel folks saw that, but it's going to take more than us in the soft world to be able to crack this nut correctly and efficiently. You know, who the CIA is chasing, who the FBI is chasing, and what they have in their specific realm, you know, because they're chasing them for different reasons, the FBI right. and the CIA. And then the tools inside the NSA, how can we leverage that to help us on the DOD side? And putting all that together makes us very, very formidable without using conventional forces. So I think it's a great way to go, because it lays out the battlefield much clearer for everyone on the DOD side if we have a smooth relationship with all those other three-letter agencies that are doing the same type of thing, slightly different, with different tools, but what they see, and mostly on the intel side of the house, is where it becomes extremely clear. You know, you take the intel analysis behind every soft operator, and it's in the 6 or 7 person range, supporting that one guy on the ground. That's what it takes to digest all this information.
Right.
Whether it's electronic, whether it's, you know, pocket litter, whether it's, you know, historical relationships, whether it's, you know, tribal relationships and that type of thing. Putting it all together, paint the picture, becomes much clearer if all those agencies talk together, and becomes all of a sudden that individual shooter, and when you commit a soft unit to the ground, it becomes very precise. And I think it's getting there. I mean, we've continued over the last 10 years to hone those relationships to make it much more effective on the DOD side, and give us the ability to do what we're doing today. You know, build that soft force, whatever flavor it is. I mean, there's a bunch of different flavors out there.
Right.
You can pick from, and they all have their own individual tasks and relationships. But it makes them much more effective and much more of a strategic tool. Yeah, so I think we're going the right way with it.
All right, you're not at all concerned about war on the down low?
No. I mean, God, I wish we could just live on the down low most of the time. It just becomes so much easier to not have to watch the news and go, uh-oh, we're going to have to answer some questions, because that news ain't right,
right.
Most of the time. And now we're going to have to do a dick dance for a week on what happened. And oh, by the way, without, you know, saying things that we can't say, and that's where it gets a little tough. So can it get out of hand? Yeah, sure. I mean, it can get out of hand. But I don't think that's our concern today.
Got it. All right. I've kept you long enough. Thanks for the visit today and the thoughts on leadership at the point of confrontation. I think it helps crystallize it. You know, yeah, there's some bad leaders out there. Sometimes you have good leaders or decent leaders that kind of go bad because the leadership environment they're in isn't a good one. Sometimes you have bad leaders, but they're in good leadership environments, so they're not going to get out of line. The optimum is good leaders in good leadership environments. That's when it is. That's when it's the best. But you have that whole spectrum of situations that Marines find themselves in. And then you're asking them to do what they're supposed to do their duty to the institution, to each other, and then to the people that come into their hands that are helpless. Sometimes it's recruits, sometimes it's dead bodies, sometimes it's detainees. And then we see what we have. And most of the time leadership environment prevents, you know, a lot of that stuff. So the combination of maybe not supervising, maybe that philosophy not getting out there as often enough as it needs to, and then that combined with the bad leaders among us provides the situation that these things happen in. But certainly it's an interesting discussion, especially with the concept of leadership and how we need to practice it. And it's always a pain in the ass to do, but it's certainly the backbone of everything we do. So, Rob, thanks for the visit. And where are you headed right now?
I'm waiting on the fish guy. I do got to pimp my neighbor's book, though.
Go ahead.
He's a, Thomas Conrad wrote a book called The Reunion. He was a Vietnam guy, Army. I think he was a CAV guy.
They love themselves. The whole Stetson with the boots and the spurs. If you're ever around the CAV guys, they are a distant second to the Marine Corps, but they love themselves like not too many other people do.
Yeah, they got a lot more accoutrement.
Yeah, and you know, and it's pretty cool when you watch it because, I mean, they are storied cavalry units that, you know, the American frontier, you know, the Indian wars that the nation fought, as well as some of those units, Civil War, go back there. But it's very cool when they trot their color guard out in their cavalry unis, and it's a big deal to them, and getting their Stetson and Spurs is a big deal. So, yeah, they're very reminiscent of another branch of the service that loves itself.
Yeah. All right, I got to run. This guy's just trying to call me.
What's the name of the book?
The book is called The Reunion, Thomas Conrad. It's you want to talk about unit discipline in there. When he does some Vietnam chapters in there, you'd kind of be amazed at what goes on. I couldn't put it down. It took me a couple days to read it in the evening, but well worth it. By the end, you're just like, man, I wish there was a extension on this thing, because it was pretty good. So highly recommended in the book review on All Marine Radio.
Nice. All right, we'll take it for action. We'll get it out there. Thanks.
All right, man, we'll see you.
You bet. That is the XO. Rob Schwarz, Montana man, recovering. That'll do it. Yeah, how about that? That'll do it on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio. Cue the music. Check out battlemugs.com. Remember, get a discount. Use the promo code Marine. It's veteran-owned and operated. Coolest gift you can get somebody if you're in trouble or if they're retiring, promoted, or whatever. All that works. Battlemug.com. Also, for all you Mustangs out there, join the Mustang Association. Find them, MarineCorpsMustang.org, on Facebook. All you got to do is search Marine Corps Mustang. I'll do it right now on Facebook. Tell you what you'll find. Marine Corps Mustang. Oh, Marine Corps Mustang Association. Boom. There you have it. Put the mouse on top of it. Get a bunch of pictures. All right. So, whatever you're doing, just stop what you're doing and go ahead and like that thing. Okay? Spread the news, man. They need your help. They do good work, scholarships, all kinds of good stuff. Help them out. Join them. If you're a Mustang, join them. My thanks this morning to Jack Hovan for coming on. He's a martial arts guy. And he's looking to hire people too. So we'll talk about that here probably tomorrow. So have a great afternoon on a Wednesday. All Marine Radio out.